Thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Movie Geeks United. We've combed through our archives to bring you what we believe represents the very best our show has to offer. Tonight, we bring you three extraordinary talents. Actress Jennifer Lawrence has hit the big time with movies like Winter's Bone, X-Men First Class, and The Hunger Games. But one of her first films was titled The Burning Plain, where she gave an astounding performance. We noticed it, and we invited her on to talk about it. Also, actress Elizabeth Shue, Academy Award nominated for Leaving Las Vegas, and before that she made her mark in great films like The Karate Kid and Adventures in Babysitting. She came on to talk to us about an independent film titled Don McKay. And finally, Ellen Burstyn, one of the terrific actresses of the past 40 years. Miss Burstyn made an indelible impression in movies like Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, The Exorcist, and The King of Marvin Gardens. And more modern audiences might know her best for her searing performance in Darren Aronofsky's Requiem for a Dream. In our interview with her, she spoke about her independent film, The Loss of a Teardrop Diamond, which was made from a previously unproduced screenplay by none other than Tennessee Williams. We begin with Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer is fantastic in this movie. She's the real discovery in this movie. She's done other things. She's got several movies upcoming as well, and her recurring role on the Bill Engvall show as well. But she is a phenomenon. Her performance in this film. And we spoke to Jennifer last week, and this is what she had to say about her experience working on the film. You're from Kentucky, aren't you?
I am.
So when did the acting bug bite you? Where did that come from?
It bit me when I was 14.
Wow.
I was in New York, and that's a long story. I'm sorry, this is awful. I was like, for a second, while I'm in the middle of an interview, I'm like, yeah, I was in New York. I was 14 and in New York, and then got discovered, and so we just tried it for the summer, and of course my parents weren't going to let me do it, but then by the end of the summer, it was totally clear that, you know, it was what I was made to do and what I was supposed to do, and so we did it, and I've just been doing it ever since.
What about it appealed to you? What struck you about it, do you think?
I don't know. I love stories. I love storytelling. I love hearing stories. And I don't know. I just think that certain people are made for certain things. I have an overactive imagination. That mm-hmm. might be a part of it. Just every part of acting, I love it. So
were there,
it feels right.
Yeah. Were there films or actors or actresses or directors that inspired you early on?
Yes. The shorter and less complicated answer is yes. I was a huge fan of Charlize Theron, which is why it was amazing to work with her.
Mm-hmm.
Meryl Streep is my favorite actress. And favorite movies. Why did The Holy Grail just came to my mind? I was like, I need to think of an artsy, great
movie. No, there's nothing wrong with The Holy Grail. That's good.
No, there's not. It's a great movie. So I guess Monty Python and The Holy Grail inspired me to be an actress.
Wow. That's something we haven't heard before. That's good.
yeah, me neither.
With The Burning Plain, did this come, was this an opportunity, an audition opportunity? How did this come about for you?
Yeah, it was just an audition, and then I got called back, and Guillermo sat me down and said, after I saw your tapes, I knew that you were the one, and I stopped all of the casting and everything, and just goes into this whole thing, and basically tells me, I'm hired, and I'm,
wow.
sitting there, I'm like, I have my headshot, should I do the audition? It was insane. I just went on a normal audition, and then on the callback, I booked it.
Tell me about him, because he seems, his enthusiasm and his passion for what he does, it's so infectious. And tell me about working with him and how he directed you.
He was amazing, actually. For never directing a film, he was one of the most interesting directors I've ever worked with. He did really interesting things that at first seemed crazy, and then you see the movie and you see that obviously it worked. Things like, I remember we didn't ask him questions about our character before we started filming. He asked us questions. And I just had to answer a ton of questions just about my character to help build Mariana, and I'd never done anything like that before. And you know, for one of the scenes where I had to look into the window and see my mother with another man, and in actuality I was looking at, you know, nothing. And he like whispered in my ear the most disgusting thing I've ever heard in my life. I've never even said that. And I was like, oh my gosh, and I like gagged, and he's like, that's the face I want. So I just like went in the window and gagged, and I ended up he's like, cook, pick the dish.
No. I read a conversation he had with a character that I think plays your father, maybe. He asked him if he knows how to ice skate, if his character knew how to ice skate. And he says, sure. And he says, well, how would he know how to ice skate? He lives in the middle of the desert. He would ask offbeat questions like that.
I know. And he's a smartass, too. But my favorite part about him is he thinks he's, like, so fly. And, like, I'm such a smartass. I'm going to, you know. And then he, I remember him telling me a story. This is when he's still iffy on language. And he said, and this 90-year-old man, he wore diapers. And I started laughing. He goes, it's not funny. He was in diapers. And I just let him go. I didn't even correct him because I was so mad. I just let him go. He probably still to this day thinks that it's diapers. And then his assistant, Adrian, was learning English. And I'm such a butthead, and I'm just admitting all of this. Everything that he would ask in English, I would end it with a ski. So he was like learning language through Jennifer, and which was like, oh, when I see big fire, it makes me sick, scare ski. And like, ski. So every single English word that he had ended with ski. And why are you doing that?
Well, I would think it would be great to have somebody that energetic on the set, because this is daunting material. When you read it, were you scared to death? Did it scare you?
No.
No?
I thought it was great. But the script itself, it's not really gonna scare you. I mean, Guillermo messes with your feelings with what he does with film, you know, how he films things in the contrast of Oregon and New Mexico and the relationships with people and the development of, you know, characters and their relationships with other people, like I just said. When you're reading the script, you can see that it's an amazing story, but once Guillermo starts, I don't know, painting it, it ends up being something completely different. And
right.
Yeah, he was great to have on set, because I just remember having a blast. I mean, everybody that sees the movie is like, that must have just been so hard for you to be in that dark place and doing a movie like that. I'm like, no, I just remember laughing all the time. We were all just, I don't know how we got into work done, actually. We were always just laughing, pranking each other, calling them everything ends and skis.
But at the same time, I mean, you're acting with one of your idols, which is Charlize Theron, in this big movie. And I was just, the question that I asked about being scared, it was a lot of times that actors gravitate towards the things that they fear the most, the most challenging. And I'm wondering what the biggest challenge of this was for you.
Oh, the trailer scene, hands down. I've never been nervous on set before. I've never gotten nervous before acting or anything like this. And I was freaking out in my trailer before that scene, because in everything that I've ever done, you can base it off yourself a little bit. You know, I know what I look like when I cry, when I'm angry, when I'm laughing. Mm-hmm. And I can do that. And I don't know. I just, what do you do? And I don't want to give away the ending,
right.
But what do you, you've seen the movie. So what do you do when something like that happens? I couldn't even really imagine what I would do. And I remember showing up on set and everybody's like, hey, like, oh, leave her alone. She's about to do something incredible. And I remember thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I'm about to let all of you down. You guys think I'm going to do so great. I'm just going to be awful. I have no idea what to do. And then they set up a C-stand with an X on it and called action. And I just started shaking and crying and everything. And then it turned out to be the right choice, I guess. And I got scared when I was on set. And then when I got in front of camera, I ended up knowing what to do, I guess. I don't know where that came from.
Well, you're a natural. I mean, and that's a fantastic, powerful scene. And I'm so moved by you in this movie. You're fantastic in it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Are you good at watching yourself on screen when you've seen this at various film festivals and screenings and things? Are you good about that?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I learn something every time I watch. You know, I don't think that I should not want to watch something because I'm afraid of, you know, if I have a double chin or how my butt looks. You know, I don't want to be able to like not watch myself on screen. It's actually, this is weird. I actually don't think I've ever told anyone this. The weirdest part about the show is when I'm watching myself on screen, I know it's me, but it's not really like watching me. It's like watching just a normal person. It doesn't really affect me that much.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to the first screening and I saw it for the first time, seeing Charlize, it was the most out-of-body experience I've ever had.
When you watch the film at film festivals and things, how has that experience been for you? I know you had a huge victory at Venice. You won an award at Venice last year for this film.
Yeah.
What was that whole experience like?
So weird. You would not even believe. Like, first of all of this is happening. I'm going to Italy, and there's like huge premieres and everything. And my brother's like, "What the hell is going on?" All of us were all just like rednecks from Kentucky, like, freaking out. And then the premiere ends, and we go back to Kentucky, and then we go to Toronto the next day for the Toronto Film Festival. And that night, I'm getting ready for the Toronto Film Festival, and Guillermo calls me, and he goes, "My dear, I have very bad news." And I was like, "What?" He says, "You cannot come tonight." I was like, "What? Why? Why can't I come tonight?" He goes, "You cannot come. You cannot come because you have to fly to Italy because you just won Marcello Mastroianni Award or something." And I was just like, "Yes! Oh, my gosh! What is that?" And started freaking out and then got on a plane to Italy, or flew to London and then to Italy, where it was then daytime. I haven't slept, so I'm probably like crazy when I land. And then go walk into this hotel room. It's like beautiful dresses hanging everywhere and like shoes lined up. I was like, "Oh my gosh, I'm a princess." And then I got ready and got the award, and it was just all so out of body. I can't even describe what that feels like. It's just such an incredible feeling when you work so hard on something and you get recognized for it and appreciated and rewarded.
It's got to be overwhelming. Yeah.
It was, but I'd take it any day.
But you're actually about to screen, I think if I read correctly, you're about to screen it in your hometown, aren't you?
I am, yeah, at the Louisville Film Festival.
Is that an exciting proposition for you? Or?
Yeah, it's really exciting, especially because my mom is like has completely taken this festival like into her own hands. There's festival people at our house all the time, and my mom is just like, "Oh, you're going to be there? Are you going to be there for the film festival?" I'm like, "Geez, yes, I guess so." But I'm really excited. I mean, it's my hometown, and now I get to, you know, share something like this, something that I love. It's been part of my life with my home people.
Well, before I let you go, yeah, your homies, yeah. Before I let you go, tell me about some of these other projects. I know that the Poker House just came out on DVD this past month, and that's Lori Petty directed it, and it's based on her childhood. And I was reading about it. It sounds pretty harrowing stuff.
It is. Yes.
Yeah.
It's apparently, I like to make movies where nobody is comfortable. that's something I've recently found out about myself. It's a dark story. It's not pretty, so it's not a pretty movie, but there's something, I mean, I love it. I admire Laurie more than anything. I think it's a great, great movie. And what the weirdest part about it is, as dark as all the subject matter is and as like terrible as everything is, there's still lightness and you'll laugh. I was so confused when I saw it for the first time. I'm like crying, I'm laughing, I'm like, I'm so confused. But it's a great film. I'm incredibly proud of it. It was my first movie.
Wow. And you have a couple other things coming up. Winter's Bone and Devil You Know I have here. What can you tell me about those?
No, that's so weird. yeah, Winter's Bone is coming up. I just did that. But Devil You Know was something that I did when I was 14, and I had one scene. I didn't say anything. I just, like, smoked a joint in the movie.
Wow.
And now it says it's coming out. What's going on?
I saw that it has a 2009 release. Unless what I'm reading is wrong. They have a Venice Award winner in a scene smoking a joint. That's probably what they're capitalizing on. But I don't know.
That is weird. Thanks for telling me.
You need to be
more on top of things. Jeez.
That's what I'm here for. So, but Winter's Bone, is that a project you're excited about, or can you tell us anything about that?
Oh, yes. I'm incredibly excited about it. It was one of my favorite books before I did it. Well, one of my mom's, and then she made me read it. I loved it, too. And it's just such an amazing story and such an incredible character. I love playing people who I could never in a million years be. First of all, you need to know I'm terrible at explaining movies and characters. It's awful. I will spend 15 minutes trying to explain a storyline and you will have no idea what I'm talking about, but I'm going to try. It's about a girl that grows up in the Ozark Mountains, and she amidst a drug town, a drug family, and she's raising her two younger siblings, and her father is out on bail, or no, he put her, I did the movie, but I don't remember what it was. Her father put their house and their property up for his bond, so she needs to go find either him or his body. And she sets out, and her family doesn't want her to do this. See, I'm going to make it sound terrible, but it's really good, and I'm afraid if I explain it, everybody's going to be like, ew, I don't want to see that.
That's okay. I have no doubt that it's great. You did a great job explaining it.
Trust me, it's great.
Well, but Don McKay, my point was Don McKay is a movie you haven't seen before.
No, I haven't, no. I mean, it sounds
fascinating. Not like any other kind of movies out there. Mm. When I say Elizabeth Shue, what's the first things that come to your mind?
Leaving Las Vegas. That's really the first thing that comes to mind. And Hamlet, too, for some reason lately. But really, Leaving Las Vegas. And isn't it also Adventures in Babysitting, if I'm not mistaken?
I know. It's funny because when you review her credits, it's like our adolescence, dude. We grew up with her, and I tell her this. It's like Adventures in Babysitting, The Karate Kid, Back to the Future 2 and 3. I mean, these are like iconic 80s movies.
Like, definitely a huge part of our youth, no doubt about that.
And then kind of to come in and reinvent herself with Leaving Las Vegas. And she's done some really interesting work in the interim. It's interesting, too, because we talked to her about Don McKay, certainly, but also about her choices post-leaving Las Vegas, and she has some very interesting things to say there about that. But without further delay, here is our conversation with actress Elizabeth Shue.
My name is Don McKay. I'm here to see Sonny Ross.
You got my letter?
Yeah.
Sonny and I went to school together.
We were boyfriend and girlfriend in high school. Haven't seen each other in a long time. They're so beautiful.
Sonny needs right now is a friend. Demon from her past.
nobody else I can trust.
Why don't you just tell the cops?
You know why.
Are you accusing me of something?
You're lying to me.
Oh. You've been had, Don. Is there anything wrong?
I don't know. Did you?
I was hoping that you would kill him.
What do you need from me? Help me with the dead body.
I appreciate you taking time out so much for this.
No problem. We're really actually more appreciative of you guys covering the film because it's one of those where we need you more than you need us.
Well, no, your film is fantastic. And I was actually talking to Jake earlier, and I was telling him how I'm so thankful for movies that aren't carbon copies of movies I've already seen. And this is completely unique, this movie. So tell me about your reaction to it. How did the script come to you, and what was your take on it when you first read it?
Well, I instantly responded to it just because the writing was so good, and it's so rare to read a woman's character that's so just has potential for so much, just so many choices. There was just, like, no end to who she could be.
Mm-hmm.
And I also already knew that Thomas was attached, and so he's just, I think, one of our greatest actors that we have. And I was really excited at the idea of working with him. So I didn't even finish the script before I talked to Jay. And then during our conversation, we had such a open conversation, and I was sort of telling him that, you know, things like, oh, I just don't know if I can, I can't play a femme fatale kind of in the Sharon Stone vein. I just don't think I'd be good at that. But, you know, she also could be this kind of more like childlike kind of game player who really, you know, what if she fell in love with Thomas for real, because that's just who she is. She just doesn't understand reality and fantasy and whatever. We just started having this conversation. He was like, yeah, that could actually be really great. And he was like, yeah, I like that idea. And then I found myself, like, committing on the phone.
Wow.
We were just, like, having a conversation, but it was so going so well, and I hadn't even finished the script.
Well, that's what's unique about it, I would think, because you said that it was kind of open for interpretation, this role, and building it. Was getting the tone of the character important? When did you feel a danger of going too far or not going far enough?
Yes, definitely. I was very, like, there's certain movies that even after I do them, I just can't even bear to look at them because I'm so terrified that I'm going to look at them and go, yep, you didn't do it. Nope. You didn't go far enough, or, oh, that didn't work, or, God, you know, like, I just can't. I just am so scared to see it. And this was definitely one of them. I did not want to see it. So I knew that that was a good thing. I always feel like it's kind of good if you're doing work where you're terrified and you're not sure it's going to work.
Yeah.
But then when I was actually on the set, which was odd, is that because Jake is such an encouraging, very sweet, and he's so grateful that we were there. You know, he's constantly saying, thank you so much, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just so not used to that kind of instant support. You know, you always feel like you have to earn the respect of the director, like, and by the end he's like, I'm very happy you were in the movie, you know, but the whole time you're wondering if you've done what would, you know, please him. And Jake just gave it up so quickly in the beginning that I think he really helped us to just kind of feel free,
right?
And then as I get to know him more and more, I'm just amazed at how his vision was so specific. Like, he really knew what he wanted so specifically that the reason why he was grateful, I think, is because he started to see it, like, come alive in front of him. He's like, oh, this is exactly what I had hoped, you know? And
yeah,
all the details of that movie, when I see it, I'm like, my God, like, the, you know, the jukebox, I think, is such a brilliant
mm-hmm.
part of the movie. And just, I'm just amazed that his mind and imagination could conceive of all of this movie. You know?
Well, and I think kind of giving you that freedom as a performer would be really important for a role like this. But
yeah.
Even so, when you're doing it, is there ever a moment when you think, yes, I have her, or is it just all of an ongoing process where you're constantly reaching?
I just think at some point you just have to trust and then just go, because you know, I sort of made a kind of bold choice, and once I made the choice, I was kind of stuck, like I couldn't really go back. And it really helped me, and I was so happy in a way, because I really believe that she just lives in the moment, and she, you know, the plan changed 10 times in her head based on, like, thinking, oh, I like this guy. He's really cute, and he really likes me, and this could be really fun. And, like, I didn't overthink it too much, because I realized that that was who she was. If I did overthink it, then I would become the calculated femme fatale. And I really wanted to see if I could get into the head of someone who just was so excited to play.
Right.
And didn't understand the consequences of what she was doing. Like, even, you know, at the end, I it was literally like, what do you mean you're going to slap me across the face? All right, I'm going to hit you with a piece of beef. And then I'm going to hit you again. And I didn't know you died. You died? Shit. All right, now we got to take care of this. What's going to happen now? All right, fine. Someone's got to kill somebody or else I'm going to get in trouble. And I'm not getting in trouble, you know.
But yeah, yeah.
Like, I felt like that was, it was never, oh, I'm going to get her to come over here and I'm going to kill her with the beef, you know?
Right. No, I understand. I understand. But this being an independent film, Jake said that it was something like a 19-day schedule, and I'm sure your work on it had to have been even less than that. But
yeah.
When you're working on an independent, a smaller project like this with a short shooting schedule, what does that do for you as an actor? Is it helpful in any kind of way?
Yeah, totally helpful. Yeah, very much so. For me, anyway. Because, again, you can't overthink it. You have to commit and then just go. And you feel like you become the character much more so because, you know, you just your life doesn't invade. You're not constantly going back and forth. I have to go back and forth because I'm a mom of three people. Like, I can't, you know, just live in the insanity and go off the deep end. I have to go back and be a mom. So I'm really used to now going in and out of character a lot. But yet the intensity of the experience, I think, helps you hold your character easier.
Yeah.
And I just find it very stimulating. And I just love the, you know, sometimes on those 16-hour days or 18-hour days, and you're like, oh, God, these little movies are going to kill me. but overall, it's much more creatively alive, and I've always gotten to play the most extreme characters, because a big movie is not a big budget movie is never going to have a character like this in it, you know, ever. You've got to bless them and love them. You can't wish you were doing big budget movies, because, you know, obviously they pay the bills and you have to do them, but you have to keep looking for the gem characters.
Well, that kind of goes into another question I had of you, because you've been doing this for a long time. I mean, so many of us grew up as you were growing up in some of these iconic movies.
We're adults now.
I know. I don't remind me. Does acting give you something different now than it used to? Does it mean something else to you now?
No, I think I'm much more grateful. Probably when I'm working, I'm aware of how difficult it is to find something you really love, and that, so when I do get the chance to do something, I'm like, wow, I'm so lucky. Whereas before, I do look back at the time where I had a lot more power, and there were so many scripts that, my God, the scripts, like, I had, you know, tons of scripts to look at and think about, and things I turned down. I think, wow, I would never have turned those things down now. You know, I would have loved to play that character. It would be so much fun, because I know I'm just going to do it once a year. I know that I'm really, you know, it's something that you don't get to do forever. If you're lucky, you get to do it as long as I have. Who knows? You know what I mean? So much more grateful.
Do you feel more fearless in a way in your choices?
I definitely feel like, yeah, I definitely don't. I think that's just growing up as a person. I really could care less if you like me now. Whereas I'm sure there was a lot of, that was just part of my personality. I was a little more kind of constricted by wanting to be liked in general. So I do feel I'm freed up actually when I'm working. Like if I'm not I don't feel like I'm doing something to please somebody. I feel a little more like I'm trying to please myself.
Right, right.
Which is probably just growing up a little and kind of, I think an artist has to please himself and the director. They have to please each other, but you can't, you have to express what's going to stimulate you. You can't be constricted and, you know, be a robot. So that's definitely changed a lot.
So you said that you find it difficult to watch yourself in some of these films, but
yeah.
have you seen Don McKay with an audience yet?
I have. I got to see it. Yeah, the first time I saw it with an audience, it was completely finished, and I'd really only looped, and I saw a few scenes when I looped. Yeah, I was so happy at how much the audience laughed. I thought that was like such a welcome surprise and really wonderful. And that they seemed to really enjoy the ride, like they really.
Mm-hmm.
They really got it, and they really they stayed with it, and I was really so happy. That to me is the best feeling when you're in an audience and they're with the movie. And I see that with my husband's films a lot, like documentaries, and I'm like, wow, they're really with the movie, and they're really like really engaged, and
mm-hmm.
and it's harder to really feel that with. Right, just other movies, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
But I have a couple of questions. If I can pick off a couple of questions from our listeners real quick.
Yeah.
For you. A listener, Carl with a K, wants to know, did you base Sarah in Leaving Las Vegas on someone in particular?
No, definitely not. I definitely got to know some people in that world, and I learned a lot about sort of the psychology of what would be a character who is in that world would feel on many different levels, and try to understand what would drive her through that kind of research. And then I felt like it was my duty to just like throw myself into it with my own psychological makeup and just put myself right there as if that, you know, that was me and these are the situations I'm in and this is how I'd react, and just try to, you know, put myself in there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I didn't really have anyone to base it on except my own psychology.
did that feel like a kind of a different phase that you entered following that movie for you in your career?
Kind of, although I guess I did get a chance to play a lot. I did get more opportunity, obviously, but when I still look back and I go, wow, I really should have been doing more independent films after that. I should have just been
mm-hmm.
just nonstop looking for them, because I would have had so much choice. I would have actually had more power to really find even more amazing characters to play. And I think I possibly got lost in having a, quote, career for a few years there, and then I think motherhood took over, and then I think I just lost a little of that power to find those movies, and then, you know, a few movies don't come out, and you're like, shit, now I have to really struggle to get those parts again. So I do feel like I could have maybe stuck to just finding great parts then, you know what I mean, and not cared about the career, because that was probably going to be a tough one anyway, you know?
Right. But even so, you've got, if I'm reading it correctly, you've got 4 additional movies in the pipeline coming up?
Well, the one movie, I think Waking Madison will probably never see the light of day. That was something I did like probably 4 years ago that I don't think will make it out there. But Piranha, yes, will definitely come out. And I really actually, that is a big budget movie, but I was lucky. I got to work with a great director. And I loved working with him. And I think it's going to be really fun.
Who directed that one?
Alex Aja.
Okay.
Aja. He did
yeah.
Hills Have Eyes.
Yes.
So that was that turned out to be a really, really challenging experience. It was kind of, you know, playing an action hero, having to be a sheriff of all things. that took me a long time to get used to. I felt like a fraud for the first few days. and then the thing that I really love that hopefully will get distribution is called Janie Jones, which is, it's a very much a supporting part, but a really wonderful part. I got to play the mother of Abigail Breslin, and a very distraught mother who abandons her kid to a father that she doesn't know, that I, 13 years before, had an affair with. And I'm a meth addict, and I can't take care of her. I sort of abandon her and give her over to Alessandra Nivolo, who's a sort of fading rock and roll star. And it's this beautiful love story, really, between a father and a daughter, and it's kind of edgy and kind of very honest. And it was just really a great experience, great actors, and a great part, even though I'm only in, like, four scenes. It was three scenes, whatever. It was just, like, great scenes and really challenging and scary and hard to do.
Well, you've been saying that the independent films that you're offered, they're the most interesting roles for you.
Yeah,
they sound like it.
They have to. I mean, they have to be invariably because, you know, that's what makes them unique. And a big studio is not going to spend money on such a small, as they say in quotation marks, such a small movie. In fact, I think the small movies become large movies because they actually, you know, they tackle real humanity and they take you really on a ride that's more emotional and more complicated than, you know, seeing the same movie over and over and over and over and over.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, can I just ask you about working on Curb Your Enthusiasm? Because I don't think there's a funnier show in the history of TV.
Yeah, and that last season was like a perfect season, huh?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
You think, I hope he comes back and does it again. He always, I guess, threatens to.
I think he is. I think.
Is he coming back?
Jeff Garlin and Richard Lewis both think that he's doing it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, he's awesome. I got to know him through Davis, my husband. The two of us were on the award circuit, kind of as the plus ones over on the side. His wife at the time was a producer of Inconvenient Truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so Davis directed it and whatever. So I was there, and we got to know each other through that. And he's great. He's like, I think I have something, you know, you should do on this. And I had no idea what it was. I had no idea it was anything to do with the Seinfeld reunion. Nothing. Zero. So it was a little shocking when all of a sudden I was auditioning for something in front of Jerry Seinfeld. I was like, what? Oh, God. That was so, so intense. Oh, that was like a real audition moment for me.
The movie is called The Loss of a Teardrop Diamond. It opens up in limited release in theaters on December 30th. I believe it's also available on demand, if I'm not mistaken, video on demand.
I'll have to go and check that out. Awesome.
It's a terrific movie. And now it's time to hear from Ellen Burstyn. Ellen Burstyn, just a dynamite actress.
Definitely.
We all know her from The Exorcist is probably her most infamous role.
I like that, infamous. I like that. It's a good choice of words. Good.
Yeah, but do you think about how demanding that movie was and that role?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right.
Physically, emotionally, I mean, and she's the star of the film.
Mm-hmm.
She gives it a lot of resonance. Also, movies like Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore with Scorsese,
mm-hmm.
which is a real change of pace for Scorsese early on in his career, making a female-centered film.
That's true.
When he was coming up with Mean Streets and all those tough guy movies. Requiem for a Dream, you know, probably most recently that really garnered her a lot of acclaim. Mm-hmm. But really on and on, her resume is just staggering. And she is terrific in Loss of a Teardrop Diamond. We talk a lot about particulars in her performance and how she reads Tennessee Williams and translates it into film. Here's Ellen Burstyn. I'm a huge fan of Tennessee Williams, too, obviously. I was wondering, have you had experience performing Tennessee Williams material in the past?
Only at the Actors Studio. You know, I worked on scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do a whole production. Tennessee sent me a play that he wrote about Zelda and asked me to do it, Zelda Fitzgerald. And
yeah.
I love that character and I love Tennessee's writing, but I just didn't happen to like that play. So I didn't do it, not realizing it was my last chance until now to do a Tennessee Williams production. So this is really my first full Tennessee Williams project I've done.
Well, when I think about Tennessee Williams, obviously he has a number of qualities that make him stand out as one of our great playwrights, but particularly his depiction of female characters.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you define his unique voice when it comes to interested crafting those characters?
Well, I think he was interested in women. You know, very often writers, the characters they're interested in are the men, and the women are kind of accessories, mm-hmm. where Williams was really interested in the women and what was happening to them interiorly, and you know, was interested in exploring that. I think the love that he felt for his sister and the sympathy he felt for her made him more attuned to women than a lot of writers are looking at women from a man's point of view, but Tennessee was really looking at women from their own point of view.
And the female characters, they might be construed as having kind of contradictory elements to them. They're very strong-willed, but very vulnerable as well. But you see that in something like The Glass Menagerie, the way he viewed his mother as opposed to his sister. It's very complicated, his
well, I
depiction
think that,
of
that was part of his interest, is in the complexity, you know, and the qualities that were not consistent but were present in one moment but not in the next moment. It was the combination of qualities that makes a character interesting. You know, if somebody is just the good wife or the bad mother or the, you know, rebellious daughter, that's not so interesting. But when there are all of those things, then we start to get a full spectrum of a human being.
Well, the scenes you have in this film, there's a couple of scenes, but they're so crucial to the piece, and there's so much there. But I'm wondering, is the preparation you do different when you have a few scenes to create a character as opposed to where you have all the time in the world to relay an arc of some sort?
No, not at all. In this particular case, I went to a hospital and observed a woman who had had a stroke and had the physical characteristics that Miss Addie had. And so I would have done that if she was throughout the film or just in the two scenes that I'm in, because it was this concept of a woman who was a world traveler. She wasn't just any woman. She was a woman who traveled the world and wrote about it. So movement was the essence of her existence, now suddenly unable to move. You know, that was the essential problem.
Yeah. And how, in your mind, does your character in this film mirror Bryce's character? What does she have to teach her, do you think?
Well, Bryce is an outsider. I mean, Fisher is an outsider who doesn't fit into the conventional construct. Society's idea of the way a person ought to live, especially a young lady. And Miss Addie is someone who didn't fit in either. She was a different kind of person. I'm not sure, but what she wasn't homosexual. I have a feeling she might have been, because she was very independent and unmarried and you know, traveled the world, and there are certain indications that I got that she might have been a mirror image of Tennessee. And of course, he was always an outsider, even when he was a famous playwright. And so she took full responsibility for her life, even to the point of wanting to decide when it should end.
Right.
So I think she holds up a model for Fisher of what an independent woman can be that's not going to make the conventional choices.
I would think that the atmosphere on the set had to be particularly special, because it's an original, unproduced Tennessee Williams piece, and that feels kind of like callow ground for an actor.
I would say there was a sense of keen dedication. There wasn't any cynicism or any, let me change this line, or I'm not comfortable with this word. You know, it was the work was held sacredly.
And is it difficult to master Tennessee Williams tonally, particularly in a cinematic performance?
Well, I don't know if I did, but if I did, I didn't feel any hardship in that. His language is so beautiful that it supports you, you know. He expresses things so poetically that it's easy to feel what he was getting at, you know.
Yeah. And tell me about, I want to ask about the directors that you've worked with as well. And on this one, you have Jodie, and she comes from the stage. I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit about her and if you think that stage experience is important for a director on a film assignment.
Well, I think stage experience is important for any theater artist. I think people who are trained for the stage and then can move to film easily, but it's not true the other way. People who are film trained, when they go to the stage, I've seen it too often where, because when you're in a film, you're pretty much only acting when the camera's on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas when you're on stage, you're in the scene the whole time. And I've seen actors who come from film and go on stage, and they're only acting when on their lines. And the rest of the time, they're just kind of standing there. They're not being in that environment and living in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
And Jodie having stage experience and acting experience makes her much more skilled in listening and detecting the subtleties of acting and knowing what the process is. So I always love working with directors who've been actors.
Mm-hmm. And the ones that you've chosen to work with, the best, Scorsese and Friedkin and Aronofsky and on and on and on, these seem to be very edgy filmmakers, and I'm wondering what qualities you respond to most from a director.
Well, I love creativity, period. And if a director is creative in any way, whether it's with the camera or the text or the whole overall conception, I get turned on by other people's creativity. So, like,
mm-hmm.
being around somebody like Marty or Darren Aronofsky, it's exciting, and it you know, lights a fire under me, or adds flame to my fire. So those are my favorite directors, the ones that are imaginative.
Mm-hmm. And you've been acting for many years, and I'm wondering what acting gives you now, the importance it has in your life and the satisfaction you get from it, and how that's matured or changed throughout your career.
Well, early in my career, I wasn't sure of myself. I wasn't sure that I could come up with what my concept was. And sometimes I did, and on occasion I didn't. And as time has gone by, I've learned more and more ways to make myself be relaxed and have what I need in a scene available to me,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so it's gotten to be more satisfying because there's less tension and more assurance, and at the same time made me look for new ways, new difficulties to explore. And then, you know, I teach a lot, so I'm also sharing what I know, so I've gotten clearer about it.
You do teach, and you teach at the Actor Studio.
Yeah.
I think you're on the yourself and Mr. Pacino and Keitel.
Yeah, we share the presidency, and right now I'm functioning as artistic director too.
Tell me about the actors coming up now, and how they possibly compare with when you were coming up.
Well, when I was studying with Strasberg, you just did study. You didn't just expect to work only when you were employed.
Mm-hmm.
You studied all the time. You closed in a play and were back at the studio the next day, signing up to do a scene. And, I mean, I've even had the experience of doing a play I wasn't successful in and signing up at the studio and bringing it in to Lee to show him what I was doing so I could have some analysis of where I missed. We don't have that as much now. There are some actors who do, thank God. And we have some very exciting new actors at the Actors Studio. But I work often with actors who the only time they act is when they're employed, and therefore they're as Lee Strasberg used to call it, their instrument isn't in tune. They don't really know how to go to the depths, you know. So I, whenever I can, I encourage actors to get in a workshop, even if they've done a television series or they've performed on Broadway, they should be in a workshop when they're in between jobs. So they stretch their talent.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me just say that this is a beautiful film, and you give just a gorgeous performance in it. And
thank you. I'm so glad you liked it.
Become a member of the Movie Geeks United family. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/MovieGeeksUnite, Facebook at facebook.com/MovieGeeksUnited, YouTube at youtube.com/MovieGeeksUnited, or bookmark our website at MovieGeeksUnited.net. And you can also access our entire library of programs, including more than 600 filmmaker interviews, right here on Blog Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com/MovieGeeksUnited.